Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians can't complete the comeback, fall 5-4 in the series opener on Monday against Seattle. Tristan McKenzie gives up I believe all five runs, just didn't look like the same Tristan McKenzie in his season debut that we had seen and were expecting as he was going through spring training. What do you think the difference was in Tristan last night from what we had seen all through the Cactus League to stepping on the mound in the first game of the season?
Well, I think he couldn't throw enough strikes, Joe. You know, he only threw about 60% of his pitches for strikes. The second inning, Seattle drove his pitch count up. He walks back-to-back batters with one out. Then he gives up the three-run first-pitch homer to Canzone. And that was pretty much the game, Joe. I think they said he was having trouble getting a big, you know, controlling a slider. He kind of settled down, had a decent third inning. Then he got some kind of bad luck in the fourth. Single goes off Jose Ramirez's glove at third. Josh Naylor makes an error at first, and he's out of the ball game. Not a great start for Tristan. He said he was healthy. He said he felt good after the game, but he had looked much better in spring training than he showed last night. And I guess that's a difference between the Cactus League and the real season.
Yeah, that's the big difference. And, you know, just looking at the Statcast numbers, and that's immediately what I went to just to check, just to track his velocity. And the four-seam fastball velocity, 90.5 miles per hour average with a high of 92.6 and a minimum, a low of 88.4. So he was somewhere between, you know, 89 and 93 pretty much all night on his fastball. And really, you know, that's going to be what we sort of keep track of, because when that starts to dip, or you know, when his, like you said, his command of the strike zone becomes difficult, you know, that's an indication that there's something wrong physically that he's just not letting on about. But I'm just sort of like me, I think a lot of us are just waiting, watching, holding our breath for him to just walk off the mound and say, you know, that's it. That's, you know, I felt it. And you know, and then he's headed for surgery. But you know, spring training had gone so far and done so much to sort of set aside some of those fears for us, and then to see him come out in the first game of the regular season, his first start of the regular season, and do that really just sort of shakes that faith.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he threw more sliders than fastballs. Usually, you know, I think he's you know, fastball first pitcher. So 36 sliders, 26 fastballs, 16 curveballs. You know, he just had trouble settling in, and well, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see his next start, which I would imagine comes against the Twins here, Joe. I would think in his next series on this trip.
All right. Now I recall when he you know, hurt himself after the comeback last year. There was a conversation about, was he throwing too many curveballs, or was he, I believe he was facing Houston, and there was a high percentage of curveballs thrown. And, you know, the conversation was, did throwing too many curveballs, you know, hurt him, or was it maybe that he was protecting himself by not throwing as many fastballs? Who knows, you know, what the case is there. But, yeah, I think maybe with another start in Minnesota, hopefully the weather conditions are better for him there, are good for him there. I mean, they were bad last night, but better than they could be in Minnesota when he pitches next, and hopefully, you know, things work out as he goes forward. Offensively, they tried to rally. They put together a couple of innings, and a couple of guys looked pretty good at the plate, but were not able to rally in that situation. A nice night for Tyler Freeman. He hits his first home run of the season after he figures out that, you know, hey, maybe we should not hit the ball to Julio Rodriguez in center field, because early in the game, Rodriguez robs Freeman of maybe extra bases against the wall with a nice catch. Later, Julio Rodriguez helps Freeman to extra bases when he Jose Canseco's a ball over the wall off of his glove. That helps out the Guardians' cause. So Tyler Freeman with a home run, Josh Naylor with a home run later in the game that cut the lead to one, and Bo Naylor with his first two hits of the season.
Yeah, I thought they were going to come back and win that game last night, Joe. It just had that feeling. Once McKenzie left, the bullpen came in and did a great job defensively. It was really a strong showing, I thought, by Cleveland. Freeman throws out a guy at the plate. Then Stephen Kwan and Ramirez do a great relay to get another play at the plate, another get runner at the plate. Our buddy Manny Acta had a busy night. Seattle's third base coach. He was waving him home, and the Guardians were throwing him out. And then, you know, when Naylor hits the home run in the eighth, it's a one run game. And I, you know, it had that feeling that it was that, you know, they were going to come back, but they just couldn't score again.
They did use a couple of pinch hitters, David Fry and Estevan Florial, pinch hit for Will Brennan late in the game in a couple of situations. Neither one of them were able to come through with a hit, but, you know, you start to get an idea of what Stephen Vogt's bench and, you know, his late game substitution pattern is going to look like and take shape. So, you know, there's a little bit of exposition there for us to see, you know, how things are going to go that way. You know, it all comes down to the big 3-run home run that was hit earlier in the game by Dominic Canzone. This is I believe it was the second inning. Canzone hits the home run. This is a local guy, a Cleveland guy, I believe, Walsh Jesuit grad. Is that correct? He went to Ohio State.
Yeah, I did not know that, Joe. I didn't know that.
So Dominic Canzone hit a ball a ton off of Tristan McKenzie, and 26 years old, he's out there you know, victimizing the team that he most likely grew up you know, watching.
Yeah, and it was a shot too, and you know, they just never really recovered from that. You know, and McKenzie kind of set the scene with two walks and a single in that inning, and Canzone just kind of ambushed him there. But it was, you know, that was a nice swing by that kid.
Yeah, you know, something to keep an eye on for the rest of this series to see, you know, how he continues to go. Obviously, they've got Shane Bieber on the mound tonight, so a good chance to bounce back against the Mariners. But on the other side of things, it's Luis Castillo, and that's a guy who always gives always gives Cleveland a hard time.
Yeah, they need Bieber to at least give them seven innings tonight. They need the Bieber that you know, was so dominant in Thursday season opener against the A's, six scoreless, 11 strikeouts. They could use that version, because there's been a lot of short starts in between the season opener and tonight's game. And the bullpen's almost thrown as many innings as the rotation, and that's not a good ratio, Joe.
Yeah, the bullpen didn't give up an earned run after McKenzie left the game in the fourth inning. Nick Sandlin came in, issued a walk with the bases loaded, but managed to go an inning and a third with a strikeout. And Cade Smith, again, looked really sharp. One and a third innings, three strikeouts, one walk. Is he earning himself more opportunities and sort of different opportunities as he goes out there and performs the way he has?
Yeah, I think definitely. I don't think Stephen Vogt is going to shy away from going to him. He's got eight strikeouts in three and a third innings, Joe, in his first two games in the big leagues. So, you know, this guy's on fire. I mean, he's throwing between 95, 97 miles an hour. He's got two good off-speed pitches. He looks like the real deal. He started really strong, and we'll see how he keeps going. I'm sure they'll pick his spots. I don't know if he's ready for, kind of high leverage innings yet, but he's certainly working his way toward that.
Yeah, and last year at this time it was Tim Herron who had come out and had blown everybody away and was sort of making an impressive showing in his first couple of outings, and then reality sort of set in for a rookie, and he had trouble throwing strikes and whatever. It just going on pure stuff alone and what you see with the eye test, Cade Smith looks really good. It's just how is he going to maintain, and is he going to maintain that sort of performance over the next several months to see where he sort of fits in that bullpen, as being sort of the last guy to make the club. But certainly over the first couple of games here, he's proving his value. All right, want to listen remind our listeners, if you want to follow along with Hoynsey out there on the West Coast portion of this trip, the best way to do so is to get Guardian Subtext. Sign up at cleveland.com/subtext, and we will send text message updates to your phone directly. You don't have to mess with social media or wait around. You get instant updates that way. 216-208-4346 if you want to sign up for $3.99 a month. Send a text message to that number, or go to cleveland.com/subtext for the latest from the Guardians and from Hoynsey and from me, covering the team on a daily basis. Hoynsey, a couple of league-wide topics I want to get into, just in terms of discussion. Last night, I don't know, it's been since May 15th of 1981 since the Guardians have thrown a no-hitter or a perfect game. The Astros in that time have thrown probably a dozen of them. They've got Major League Baseball's last four no-hitters, the most recent of which was Ronel Blanco last night against the Blue Jays in a 10-0 win. Ronel Blanco throws the earliest by date Major League Baseball no-hitter in quite some time. I think it might be the earliest by date of all time, because opening day didn't used to happen in the first couple of days there, but first couple of days of April. It's also Joe Espada, the new manager for Houston. They had gone 0-4 against the Yankees over the weekend, so this was his first win. He's the first manager in Major League history to pick up his first win with a no hitter, and this is his first time being a major league manager. His first victory with any ball club comes on a no hitter by Ronel Blanco. Why can't the Guardians get one no hitter? The Astros have a no hitter in each of the last 4 years. I mean, that's it's just crazy to think about.
Yeah, I mean, they develop pitching. I mean, Cleveland develops pitching, but the Houston develops no hit pitching. 17 no hitters in their franchise history, Joe. That's incredible. I mean, they have the secret sauce, whatever that is. And this guy, what a this guy was what, the fifth starter, their number five starter? I think he made the club out of spring training as their number five starter. That's good for him, man. That's what an accomplishment.
I mean, you've got a rotation that Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, these guys. I believe Javier is hurt though. So yeah, it's just crazy to think of how they're able to just keep rolling out guys, and not to be able to just finish, not to have guys who have no hitter stuff. I mean, every team has got a guy on their staff who's got no hitter stuff, and it could happen any day. But to be able to finish it, every year, to be able to at least do one, to cap one off. I mean, we're talking about going on 43 years for the Guardians here of not having a no hitter in that span. Len Barker's perfect game keeps getting farther and farther away, and the Astros keep throwing out no hitters. It's a f every time this happens, we ask the question, who's going to be the next Guardians pitcher to throw a no hitter? Who's going to be the next guy in a Cleveland uniform to actually finish the deal. It used to be fun to say Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber might still throw a no-hitter in his career. Not so sure it's going to be with the Guardians. Tristan McKenzie would have been a popular pick after his near perfect game in Detroit. But now with the injury concerns, maybe that'll never happen. Is there a guy that you can see and picture in the future, sealing the deal, actually coming through and finishing off a no hitter?
Perhaps Gavin Williams, perhaps Tanner Bibee. They have the kind of stuff. They're young. They're still developing. Maybe somewhere down the road, they can do that. The closest I think I've ever seen a Cleveland pitcher come, Joe, is Carlos Carrasco in Tampa Bay when he was, two outs, two strikes in the ninth inning of a no-hitter and gives up a single. And he loses it there. So, that's the closest I think I've seen a Cleveland pitcher come to it.
Yeah, if Jason Kipnis were 6'2", I think that we would not be having this conversation because that ball that went for the base hit went, directly over Jason Kipnis's glove. And it was I remember seeing that and thinking, oh, man, Hoynsey's probably got his game story all written and everything's all good. And you got to go and tear that up. I felt worse for you actually in that moment than I did for Carlos Carrasco, because he's playing with house money. But you've got the story pretty much ready to go. As far as obviously the Astros did not get off to a great start against the Yankees. The Yankees are as hot as you can be. But this throwing a no hitter in this situation can really propel them forward, right?
Oh yeah, that's a great boost, to the team, to the pitching staff. It brings energy to the ballpark, to the fans, and it gives you hope. Espada, he was one of the mentioned in the managerial search in Cleveland when Terry Francona stepped down. But I think he was always the guy in Houston, Joe, to replace Dusty Baker. He seemed like he was always the favorite.
All right. The other big topic of discussion the last couple of days, incident happened over the weekend in New York with the Brewers facing the Mets, the Rhys Hoskins debate and the slide that he had into second base against Jeff McNeil, the second baseman there, and basically everybody's reaction to that. I know, Hoynsey, you've seen the video and the reaction to it afterwards. What's your take on the situation? And so everybody knows, Hoskins was later thrown at, and the Mets reliever who threw at him received a 3-game suspension because the next time up he hit a home run after that slide, and then predictably his next at bat, the first pitch sailed right over his head. Just your reaction to Hoskins' slide initially, and then the reaction to it.
Yeah, I thought it was a late slide, Joe. He came over the base right at, he took a direct path into the base, but it was late. He came over, came right over the bag, hit the shortstop, it looked bad. It was, they said it was a legal slide, but it looked bad. I don't blame, the Mets for being upset. From there, I guess that's, it looked like Hoskins didn't even realize what he did. He was just kind of laying on the bag, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess there's an important distinction here between if it was a legal slide or if it was a dirty slide. And I think everybody will look at that and say, well, yeah, it was a legal slide according to the letter of the law. And the play was even reviewed because McNeil was going to turn the double play there. And lost the ball, but Hoskins was already called out on the turn at second. So legal play, legal slide, because he could still grab the bag. It was a late slide. He was over the bag by the time, and he made contact with McNeil's leg. Whether it was a dirty slide or not is something totally different, and that's he knew what he was doing going into the bag late, going over the bag and making contact. So yeah, did he realize he was, making a play that was close to being illegal and it could have been called for, could have actually been called a double play? I think he realized what he was doing. And that's sort of what the Mets are reacting to, was it was a dirty play. Did the Mets handle it the right way, after he came up and hit a home run later in the game? It was pretty obvious what they were doing when they threw at him with the first pitch of his next at bat. Is that the way that things should be policed in terms of, they've been doing this for years, but, I've heard many veterans come out and say, that first pitch should have hit him in the leg or hit him in the rear end, or, you don't mess with throwing over his head in that situation. There's a way things have always been handled, and that wasn't necessarily the right way.
Yeah, you don't want to throw up and in on a guy or behind his head. That's the last thing you want to do. I mean, it's all right to send a message. If you're going to hit a guy, like you said, Joe, you hit him in the rear end, you hit him in the leg. Yeah, the point is the same. You've delivered a message, but I think that really puts a pitcher in a tough spot. They know they're taking one for the team. They know they're going to get suspended. And you've got to protect your teammates if you want to walk into that locker room again. And it just, I mean, some pitchers have hard enough time throwing a strike. So, I think some guys, you tell them to hit a guy and they might
And
not
they
be able to
can't,
hit the
yeah.
guy. I mean, are they going to really drill him in the exact spot you want him to get drilled? I don't know.
I mean, is that something that you have to be sort of maybe have a little bit of a veteran presence to be able to do? Like, I don't have not a doubt in my mind. And actually, Cookie used to have a reputation as a bit of a headhunter. If you hit a home run off of Cookie, you pretty much knew that he was going to go up and in the next at bat or something like that. He did have that reputation for a few years. But do you need a veteran to be able to get up there and maybe the next time that guy faces your club, or the next series, the next time you come around to his park, to hit him and have the, sort of the fortitude to be able to do that? You put a rookie reliever in there who's throwing 98 and doesn't know where the
Yeah.
ball's going. That's different, man. And tell him to hit a guy. You're taking the possibility into your hands that, it might go up over his helmet. I think you do that with a veteran, not with a guy who barely has command of his fastball. That's a different situation. But I don't even think that you do it in that game, in that situation with Hoskins. There was another game in the series that I think they were playing on Sunday again. It's not like they weren't going to have their opportunity to face him. I mean, I understand, maybe the next day he's not in the lineup, but maybe it's a little too obvious to me to be doing it the first at bat right after he hits a home run against you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that seemed like the emotions were running high in that game. And I remember there was a game in Milwaukee where that Albert Bell Fernando Vina game, and they threw at Bell later in that game, and Bell going out to the ninth inning told Julian Tavares, "You know what you have to do." And when Albert Bell is telling a young reliever, "You know what you have to do," I mean, yeah, he's going to do it, and he's going to throw at a guy and he's going to start a fight. And I'm sure that, you can, like you were saying, a young pitcher can be put in that situation, and you got to protect your teammates. But, who knows what happens to that young pitcher? I mean, he gets suspended, he comes back, maybe he's going down. I don't know. It's just a tough situation.
Yeah, but he walks into that clubhouse and, the guys can
Yeah.
look him in the eyes. I mean, don't forget there is still that sort of that clubhouse code where it doesn't matter who you are on the team, you've got the backs of those other guys. You go back to even to Miles Straw in New York, and just the esteem that he gained with among his teammates in that clubhouse by climbing that fence and screaming at those Yankee fans. That's there is a culture of that, and there it is a big deal to have your guys back like that. So,
and you know, it
kind of
reminds me. There was a game when Ellis Burks and was playing for Cleveland, and Jarrett Wright was on the team. Burks got hit one game, and Jarrett was pitching the next day, and he came up to Burks before the game and said, "Who do you want me to hit?" That's the kind of stuff that goes on. And you're right, Joe. I mean, that's how you have each other's backs, teammates.
All right. Well, Hoynesy, I got your back as long as you're out there on the road. Our next game tonight should be a great pitching matchup between Shane Bieber and Luis Castillo. Looking forward to that, and looking forward to hearing about it tomorrow on the next edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you then.
Good deal, Joe.